Chapter 8. Clyde stepped off the bus after entering Fort Lewis, Washington. The same corporal who'd ridden with them asked for his name and marked him off again on his clipboard, then directed him to stand with the others. Clyde marveled at how different from one another everybody looked. Most of them were younger than himself, but a few were older. He guessed them to be in their 30s. He could pick out who'd likely received draft notices and who hadn't, simply by looking at their faces. Some of them looked truly miserable. The draftees. Clyde guessed some of them had left well-established, comfortable lives and were now being thrown into something completely foreign. The original draft bill legislation had been drawn up in September 1941, a few months before the declaration of war. It had only called on men from the ages of 22 to 45 to register for the lottery. Now that range had expanded to men aged 18 to 65, and the draft notices had accelerated greatly. More buses pulled in, and more recruits entered the wide-open space. Soon, sergeants and corporals yelled and cajoled the men into separate groups of 20. They went through the roll call one more time and demanded they answer loudly when called. Finally, the NCOs formed them into lines, and a stern-looking sergeant barked, "Detail! Attention!" Everyone snapped to whatever they thought that meant. "Left! Face!" The group faced left, and the sergeant finished with, "Forward! Punch!" They stepped off, jostling one another as they tried to get their feet to work properly. Clyde shook his head at the absurdity. Why was walking suddenly a difficult task? They stopped when the sergeant barked, "Detail! Halt!" Despite the cool temperature, Clyde desperately wanted to wipe his brow, but didn't dare. "Right! Face!" They turned clumsily and faced a two-story building that looked as though it had been put up the day before. "This is your new home! The first and second line shall enter and move upstairs! Pick the first bunk you come to!" He looked menacingly at them, then barked, "Move!" Clyde stood in the third line, so he watched the first two lines of men stagger toward the barracks. A corporal kept pace with them, barking all the way like some crazed sheepdog. Clyde stayed at attention. The lines of men looked ridiculous in their civilian clothes, trying to march and form something resembling a line. Somehow, grown men with jobs, wives, and even children had been reduced to bumbling idiots in the span of an hour. The sergeant shook his head in disgust, and when the first group disappeared inside, he turned back to them. "You maggots will take the first floor! Same drill! First bunk you come to is yours! Don't get too comfy, though! I'll be coming through in 30 minutes to show you how to stow your gear and make your bunks!" A few men tittered as though he'd told a joke. The sergeant erupted, "Your mama ain't here! And believe me, she doesn't know the first damn thing about making a bunk the way the U.S. Army makes a bunk! Now move!" Clyde ended up in the middle of the Spartan room, standing in front of a thin mattress resting on metal springs. At the foot of the mattress, a neatly folded olive drab-colored wool blanket sat atop a grungy-looking pillow. On the floor in front of each bunk sat a good-sized box with a latched-shut lid. 6 bare light bulbs hung from the ceiling from thick black electrical cords. An adjacent hallway at the far end led to the latrines. None of the toilets had walls separating them. Privacy would be a thing of the past. He placed his bags on the floor and watched as the rest of them took in their new home with growing despair. For the first time since he'd moved into the tiny apartment with Abby, he missed its tight confines. At least it had furniture and smelled like Abby. Tar paper, wet wool, and nervous sweat permeated the air here. A hint of disinfectant wafted in from the latrine as someone flushed an exposed toilet. Even the locker rooms in high school had more privacy than this place. A young man stood near a bank of lockers along the back wall. He opened one and noticed hangers neatly lined up. "Guess this is where we hang our coats." An older man, whose pudgy cheeks and soft middle showed he'd given up on physical fitness long ago, said, "Just wait until they tell us where to put stuff. They'll be along shortly." He sounded nervous and cowed, and they hadn't even gotten uniforms yet. Precisely on time, the sergeant arrived to teach them how to pack their clothes in the footlockers and wall lockers the army way. Or as he said, the only way. Once their clothes were packed away appropriately, bedding arrived, and he and the corporal showed them how to make their bunks so the sheets fit tight enough to bounce a quarter. Clyde tried it a few times, but each time they shook their heads and made him do it again. Clyde had never seen such disgust etched onto a man's face. The sergeant finally said, "You'll have more time to practice all this tomorrow. Tomorrow morning will be your first inspection, and you will stay here without chow until every one of you has passed to our satisfaction. But now, it's time to head to the mess hall." Clyde's stomach growled, and he realized he hadn't eaten in hours. He'd heard stories about army food, but figured it couldn't be much worse than some of Abby's meals. But he'd been wrong. By the end of the meal, he longed for Abby's dry rump roasts and burnt potatoes as though they'd been at the peak of gourmet. He had forced himself to eat the spongy mystery meat, tasteless spinach, and lumpy mashed potatoes because he knew he needed the calories. But his stomach ached and churned as the corporal marched them back to the barracks. Since all the barracks looked exactly the same, he made a mental note to remember theirs was number 8. The corporal stopped them in front of the barracks. He pointed to a one-story, much smaller building next to the barracks. "That is your recreation center. You can read and listen to the radio. Don't wander. Be in the barracks by 2000 hours. That's 8 p.m. Lights out at 2100. That's 9 p.m. That's the last time I'll explain that, so learn it. Reveille is at 0600. Get to the mess hall and be back in the barracks with your bunk made and ready for inspection by 0730. He placed his fists on his hips. "You've got a lot to learn tomorrow, gentlemen. Get some sleep. Dismissed!" The whirlwind of activity over the next week made the days fly by. Clyde felt they had exposed him to so much new information so quickly that his head might explode. He learned how to march, how to salute, and, more importantly, who to salute. He learned ranks and basic unit structures. They issued new uniforms handed out by a bored PFC who asked for his waist size and gave him one size larger. "These are too big," Clyde complained, holding the stack of 4 overstarched pants. The PFC didn't even look up. "You'll grow into them, and you've got a belt in the meantime. Next!" The food didn't improve, but he ate more of it and learned to turn off his taste buds and simply swallow. He never could get used to what they called dessert, however. He didn't think it possible to ruin cake, but the army seemed to have figured it out and excelled at it. "Feed this stuff to the Krauts and old Hitler would surrender in an instant," stated Gil Hicks, Clyde's bunk neighbor. He had a thick Italian accent. "Nah," answered Clyde. "You ever smell the cheese they eat? Smells like asshole and feet." "How do you know so much?" "I'm not a dumb wop like you, Hicks. I've got a few semesters of college, even." "Tell me about your wife," Hicks leered in his odd Italian accent. A few of the others leaned in closer, hoping to get some juicy details.
"How you know I'm married?"
"You had a ring on when you got here."
Clyde had taken the ring off the second day and placed it in his footlocker. He felt naked without it, and still brought it out and kissed it nightly, as he promised he would. He hoped they didn't know about that part. "I'm not telling you anything about her. I don't want you filthy bastards jerking off to her name." He attempted to deflect the question.
"Why don't you tell me how a guy with a last name of Hicks has an Italian accent?"
Hicks just shook his head and said,
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you."
The next morning, instead of calisthenics and running, they marched into a large room with rows of partitioned tables and chairs. They sat down noisily, and Sergeant Becker held up his hands and called for quiet.
"Today, you will test for classification."
He paused, adding import to his words.
"The Army General Classification Test, or AGCT, will be handed out shortly. Do your best work. All of you wrote down what jobs interest you. Those jobs require certain scores. This test will follow you all the way through your Army career, so take it seriously."
He checked his notes and read off scores required for specific qualifications. Clyde had written down paratrooper, hoping he wouldn't be denied outright because of his marital status. He didn't want to have to make a call to Victor. When he'd heard nothing denying his choice, he assumed Victor had already greased the wheels. When Sergeant Becker reached the P's, he said, "Paratrooper, 110 points or higher." 110 sounded out of place from the lower numbers being read off, and Clyde felt beads of sweat form on his forehead. He hadn't considered that he might not even qualify for paratrooper training. He doubted even Victor could fix a low score. His mind raced. What would happen if he didn't make the cut? How would Abby feel? She'd claim to not care, but he knew deep down she'd be ashamed. The thought made him sweat more. They handed out pencils and the test pamphlets and answer sheets. Clyde thought the men around him looked miserable and out of place. Most had probably only been to high school. He felt lucky that he at least knew how to take a test from his college days. Many hours later, they called time, and Clyde closed the test. He'd only left a few questions unanswered. He felt as he did with most tests, like he had failed miserably. Normally, his assumptions turned out incorrect, and he hoped this would be the same. The one time he'd been optimistic about a test, he'd failed, so he figured he'd use a little reverse psychology to keep the trend going. He felt like he'd done fine with the writing skills section, but struggled with the math and sciences. He wondered where they'd put him if he scored low. Probably end up cannon fodder for Nazi machine gunners. They went to the chow hall, and most of them barely touched their food. Low conversations about specific questions and answers permeated the group. No one felt they'd done well, not even those trying to qualify for officer training. Private Johansson lamented, "Hell, I doubt I even hit 90, let alone 110. Clyde looked up from the gravy he dejectedly stirred around his rubbery mashed potatoes. "You going for paratrooper too?" Johansson looked as though he'd sucked on a lemon. "Paratrooper? Hell no. I'm trying for officer training, OCS. The rest of the table stared at Clyde. Hicks guffawed. "Paratrooper! You! You out of your damn mind, paisano?" Clyde didn't know whether to be offended or happy. He hadn't made his choice public and wished he hadn't opened his mouth. "I won't make the cutoff. I blew the damn test." "Why would you want to jump out of an airplane? You know that's what they do, right?" Hicks pressed. Clyde flipped in the bird. Hicks said, "You don't seem the type."
"The type?"
"Yeah, you know. Someone like Mills." He pointed to Mike Mills, who continued shoving food into his athletic body as though he wouldn't eat again for the rest of the year. Mills saw everyone looking. Around a full mouth of mashed potatoes, he mumbled,
"What?"
Hicks said, "Never mind." And Mills went back to shoveling food.
"And what about the married thing?" Hicks asked.
Clyde didn't want to tell anyone his true reason for wanting the paratroopers, nor anything about his father-in-law's influence, so he said, "You don't know me, Hicks. I'm an adventurer." Hicks nearly choked, but managed to utter,
"That why you kiss your wedding ring every damn night? You seem more like a homebody than an adventurer."
The others laughed, and Clyde's face flushed red. He barely knew them, and they barely knew him. He knew they'd soon be broken up and sent off to wherever the army sent them for the rest of their training. He'd most likely see none of them again, but he still wanted their respect.
"What about you, Hicks? What did you put in for?"
he asked with more venom than he meant. Hicks grinned evilly.
"I'll never tell."
A few NCOs filed into the mess hall and went directly to the large corkboard near the line of garbage cans they scraped their excess food into. They carried a stack of papers and started pinning them up one by one. The entire chow hall of soldiers watched them. Finally, Sergeant Decker barked,
"Your scores are posted!"
A flurry of activity erupted, but he put a quick stop to it.
"Knock it off!" he bellowed. "One table at a time. Once you have your scores, return to your table and finish chow."
Their turn finally came. Clyde found his name and felt a load slide off his shoulders. He'd passed. Barely. 111. 1 point to spare. Beside the score in his name, the words, "Paratrooper training. Qualified," gave him a surge of energy and pride. He wondered about the feeling. Was he truly excited about the training, or simply glad he hadn't had to explain his failure to Abby and her parents, not to mention his own parents? Hicks had already left. Curiosity got the better of Clyde, and he found Hicks's name. 116, paratrooper training, qualified. Clyde's mouth dropped open. Not only had the son of a bitch kicked his score in the teeth, but he'd be heading to Fort Benning with him. Soon after the AGCT scores came out, they'd both gone to Army doctors who'd put them through an airborne physical. The doctors followed a specific list of requirements, and the sadistic bastard seemed to revel in the whole experience. It involved far more poking and prodding than their initial indoctrination physicals, and by the end, their extremities hurt from countless inoculations, blood draws, and reflex hammer blows. For the next few weeks, Clyde and the others continued to learn the basics of being soldiers. They marched, stood guard, and performed various degrading duties, which mostly entailed washing dishes or scrubbing floors and toilets, sometimes with toothbrushes. They exercised daily and worked their way through the various obstacle courses, full pack runs, and push-ups. Clyde felt his body changing. He relished the exercise and wanted more. Each day they checked the corkboard for orders. As orders appeared, men would pack up and leave within a few hours. The barracks numbers thinned as men moved to where they'd go through the rest of their basic training. Few said goodbye. Hicks and Clyde were the only two paratrooper volunteers in the group. They stuck together, checked the board each day for orders to Fort Benning. Despite their age difference, they couldn't help becoming friends. Clyde asked him one evening while they cleaned and scrubbed the latrine floor, "So, what is the deal with your name? I mean, Hicks. You're Italian, and that's not an Italian name that I've ever heard." Hicks finally answered, somewhat embarrassed, "You're right." He looked around as though someone might be listening. "It's not my real name. I changed it when I enlisted." "Why? Nothing wrong with being Italian." "No? We happen to be at war with them," he said. "I didn't want my name to keep me out of the army. I didn't want the aggravation." "There's a lot of Italian Americans in the army." "Look, we came to America 5 years ago. I wasn't born here, you know. I'm an American citizen. But if they knew I've still got friends and even family over there..." He let the thought linger. He finally finished, "I didn't want to take the chance." "I guess I can understand that. What if you end up fighting them? I mean, what if you're fighting a family member?" Hicks stopped mopping. He leaned on the mop and thought for nearly a full minute. "I don't know. I really don't know. My family's tight, you know? Loyalty means everything." They continued mopping, but the mood had darkened. Finally, both their names appeared on the corkboard with orders to report to Fort Benning, Georgia. The reality of the situation set in hard for Clyde. He'd nearly finished basic training here at Fort Lewis, but he'd barely seen Abby since arriving, even though their little apartment was only a few miles away. She had a phone, so he could call her from the communal phone on base, but only on the weekends. He'd managed one weekend pass since arriving. That weekend had been a whirlwind of sex and love, and it felt like a distant dream now. But Fort Benning? He'd be on the far side of the country and doubted he'd be able to write her, much less call. And there'd be no such things as a weekend pass. The departure day finally arrived. Clyde and Gil, wearing their pressed Class A uniforms, stood at the train station, trying to figure out which one they'd ride on. Clyde searched for Abby, even though he'd told her she didn't have to see him off if she thought it would be too hard. He hoped she had come. When he finally saw her searching for him, holding her hat in the wind, he caught his breath at her beauty. Seeing her sexy curves made him want to run as far from the army as he could possibly get. He waved, and she saw him. Her radiant smile melted the bustling platform into just them. She burst into his arms, and he held her tightly as he buried his nose into her thick hair and breathed her in. "My God, I've missed you," he panted. She stepped away and looked him up and down admiringly.
You look good in a uniform, darling.
She looked around frantically.
Can we go somewhere?
Despite himself, he blushed.
Abby, you naughty girl. He'll get me kicked from the service. Would that be so bad?
She pouted. He pulled her close again and whispered in her ear,
You know I have to do this.
She nodded, and he could tell by her sniff that she struggled not to cry. He pulled back and held her face tenderly.
I love you, Abby.
They kissed passionately, despite the stares. A tap on his shoulder broke the magic.
They're calling our train, Coop.
Clyde reluctantly broke away. Abby's smeared lipstick made him want her even more. He introduced Hicks.
This is Gil Hicks. He's airborne, too. We'll be riding together all the way to Georgia.
She wiped her tears and smiled while extending her hand. Hicks took it, and they shook.
Pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Cooper,
he said in his thick Italian accent. She took a deep breath and blew it out slowly.
Sorry for such a brash display. Mr. Hicks, is it?
He's trying to hide his wapness from the army, Clyde teased. Hicks punched his arm, then spoke to Abby earnestly.
Now I know why Clyde's always kissing that ring. You're a real knockout.
He immediately blushed and stammered.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just... Well,
she put him at ease with a touch.
It's okay, Gil. She smiled sweetly. You take care.
Her voice took on a more serious tone.
I mean it. You two look out for one another. Take care of each other.
Gil's lips pursed, and he simply nodded, unable to answer.
Clyde said, We'll be fine, darling. Don't worry.
She gazed through bleary eyes and hugged him hard to her chest. She looked past Clyde's shoulder and locked eyes with Hicks. Hicks gulped and nodded at her hard, beseeching stare. The message came across loud and clear.
Watch out for my man.